So I'm going to start by reading you my favourite poem. Don't often get the chance to do that. I forgot my timer, probably need that more than normal. Poem about hope. It goes like this. It's Elizabeth Dickinson, if you're wondering. Hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words, never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. Over the past week, I've been particularly thinking about that first bit as we've been praying for this miracle building, that hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul, sings the tune without the words, and never stops at all. Sort of irrationality of hope, a little bird inside your heart that keeps on singing. I love it very much. Anyway, we're going to start this morning where we started this series. However many weeks ago, I think it's a good couple of months by now. And we're going to look back at that promise that God first made Abraham and is the basis for the entire series since then. And it goes like this. I will bless you, and I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring, all peoples on earth will be blessed because you've obeyed me. And now, 2.5 months on, we have reached the end of the book of Joshua, and we can look back at this promise that God made to the people of Israel hundreds of years ago, and we can see that he has blessed them. Tick. They are numerous. Tick. Descendants, they've taken possession of the cities of their enemies. Tick. They have a land. Tick. A nation. Tick. Their offspring blessed all the earth. I'm going to put a cross there as a little, there are glimpses of tick. Do you know what I mean? Story of Exodus, loads of people swallowed up in that. Joseph blessed loads of people. But I think maybe that last line, come the end of the book of Joshua, if you're reading it, being entirely honest with yourself, you might say that possibly the Israelites have other priorities than looking outward. They may be focused primarily on themselves. A lot of killing involved. Can't really get around that one. But there's one story. It's not a particularly Christmas story, but it marks the beginning of our Advent teaching series. And though the promise isn't finished yet when we read this story, it doesn't complete the promise. It doesn't mean that we can look at this and give it a tick. It shows us what it will look like once that promise has been completed. And that is the story of Rahab. So let's read it. Joshua 2. We're going to read through the whole thing. So we're going to take a bit of time just to enjoy it because it's such a good story. It deserves to be read. At this point in the story, to remind you, the people of Israel haven't yet crossed over into my laser working. Today of all days, my laser broke. They haven't yet crossed over into Canaan. So I've got my backup broom. It's essential because we've got a map. So they've come from Egypt all along here. Strangely, when you look at a map, they go up here and then they're waiting here to cross over the Jordan, and Jericho's that red dot. I put the map because I'd never realized it was such a strange route. Thank you, Broom. We'll be back for Broom later. And then you can see a zoom in here where you've got, it's pixelated because it's an ancient image. I don't need the broom this time, but the people of God are camped here. River Jordan's here. And Jericho is there. If you can't see it, look at a map later. Anyway, so at this point in the story, Joshua has just sent out two spies and they've gone from there to the city of Jericho. When they got there, they went to the house of a prostitute whose name was Rahab, and they slept there. And it was said to the king of Jericho, saying, look, men of the Israelites have come here tonight. to search out the land. I want to point out, this is the first night and they've been found. They're not very good spies. None of the commentaries said that, but I think it has to be said. And the king of Jericho sent to Rahab saying, bring out the men who've come to you, for they've come to search out the whole land. And Rahab had taken the two men and she had hidden them. And she said, oh, the men did come to me, but I didn't know where they were from. And as the gate was about to close at dark, the men slipped out just before it shut. If you pursue them quickly, you could probably overtake them. So I think Rahab, very smart. She's playing a very clever game. She'd actually taken them up on the roof and hidden them in the stalks of flax. Flax, imagine they are being hidden in loads of reeds, just under a pile of reeds. And the guards pursued the spies along the Jordan by the fords, and they closed the gate when the pursuers had gone out after them. So back to Brum, would have been a lot easier with the carriage. So they come here, and the fords are down here, where you can cross over the sea. So she's sent the people like that, and they are chasing where they think the spies are, because they're trying to cut them off before they get back to the people of Israel. There we go. So she's played a very smart move getting them out of the way. Rahab then went up to the spies and said, I know that the Lord has given you the land. Let's read that line again today. I know that the Lord has given you the land, that your terror has fallen upon us, and we all quail before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the waters of the sea of reeds. And we have heard what you did to the two Amorite kings across the Jordan, who you can see in this image just over there. So that's weeks ago. This is fresh news in their world, and it's traveling quickly. Of Sihon and Og, whom you put to the ban, which means killed. And we heard that, and our heart failed us. So they're very afraid. And now she says, pray, vow to me by the Lord, for I have done kindness with you, that you too shall do kindness with me, with my father's house. Give me a faithful sign and let my father and my mother live and my brothers and my sisters and all that is theirs and save us from death. And the men said to her, our own lives in your stead to die, so long as you do not tell of this mission of ours. And so, when the Lord gives us this land, we will do faithful kindness with you. And so she lowered them out her window with a rope, because her house was in the outer wall of the city. And she had said to them, go to the high country, lest the pursuers encounter you. Hide there 3 days until the pursuers come back, and then you may go your own way. So she has sent them that way into that yellow mountainous strip so that they can hide in caves or something, because it's going to take about 3 days for the people from Jericho to know that they're not going to find them by the fords. So she's played it very smartly. And the men then said to her, but we will be clear of this vow that you've made us vow, except when we come into the land, you must tie this scarlet cord in the window. Made one. That's my pace, though. Through which you lowered us, and your father, your mother, and all your father's house, you must gather them into your house. A practical stipulation, really, so that they know who's who. And whoever comes out the doors of your house to the street, his blood is on his head. We'll be clear. But whoever will be with you in the house, his blood is on our head if any hand should touch him. And should you tell of this mission of ours, we'll be clear of your vow. And she said, according to your words, so shall it be. And she sent them off, and they went, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. What I love about this story, what's really gripped me this week, is that Rahab was kind of just trying to survive. She was trying to get by. And she was using her wit to do that, All she wanted really was to escape death with her family as well. But she got so much more than she bargained for. We learn later on in the Bible that it's not just that she keeps her life. She goes from prostitution later on to prospering. Her life is transformed. We know that she married a man called Salmon. They have children, one of whom, you may recognize the name, called Boaz. And you may know he married Ruth, and they're the ancestors of King David. Adam mentioned that last week. And I think what we can see in Rahab is that her life shows us a zoomed in view of what the promise of Abraham is about. That's what it's like on one person scale, but then you can multiply the story of Rahab billions of times over. And in her story, death is replaced with blessing. She goes on to become part of the people and the family of God. And there's no half measures about that. She's not a semi-in, semi-out outsider. She's the ancestor of the King of Israel. And I think that's what the Crimson Cord's about. It's about death to life. And it's one of those details in Scripture. I love them where you read it and it kind of makes you go, huh, weird. And I think it's good to unpick those details. So let's unpick it together. And I think the first thing, you've probably thought of this one, it reminds us of Passover, when the people of Israel were passed over and their firstborns were spared from death, like Rahab, because of how the crimson streak of blood on their doorposts marked them out. It reminds us of how they escaped from death, how they escaped from slavery, and it also reminds us of, in their story, how they entered into freedom, into life, and into promise. And we see with Rahab, she passed over, she escaped death, and she entered into and was caught up in that promise. But there's a second story, an even stronger link, though it's less well known. And that one ties our story today with another. That is the story of Tamar. If you know it, Genesis 38. If you don't, we won't have time to really get into it, but it's a wonderful story. And there is a lot of threads for us to unpack here this morning. But Tamar, like Rahab, a very smart woman who has to look out for herself because no one else will. She ends up, similar to Rahab, trapped. This leads to a kind of prostitution, very similar. Like Rahab, she goes on to escape death and entrapment. Like Rahab, she is also one of the ancestors of King David. Gets a shout out in the genealogies as well. And the blessing that comes in her life is in the form of two sons who are twins, Perez and Zerah. And this is in a culture where knowing who's firstborn is like a very big deal, an important part of who land and blessings and things go on to. But as the birth is taking place, the poor midwife's thrown a curveball because Perez's hand comes out first, but then the brother, I'm acting, probably not the best thing to... Just take a moment, I'll have a drink. But then the other twin is coming out ahead of the baby whose hand came out first. And so thinking very quickly, the midwife grabs a crimson cord, wraps it round the hand of Perez so that he can be identified as the firstborn. And he's then named Perez, which I include here just because I think it's really cool. His name is Barrier Breacher, which I think is a pretty spectacular name. So both these stories that tie in that red rope are about turning misery into hope. They're about lives turned around. They're about death into life. And they're about firstborns. And I think that's something we need to pick up with in the story of Rahab, that she is also a firstborn. She's a barrier breacher. And that's because she's the first to be caught up in Abraham's promise of worldwide blessing of all peoples, but she's not going to be the last. I think that's the really important thing that we see in this story, that the crimson cord is a signpost to us that there are more to come. There's another beautiful little signpost hanging in there, that the word the writer uses for the crimson cord is tikvah. But elsewhere in the story, he uses a different word, which is chevel, which is enjoyable to say. But that just means rope. But tikvah is a really interesting choice because it also means hope. A bit like we'd say lifeline is a word. It's kind of got like other meanings to it because a lifeline is a rope you throw overboard. If someone's drowning, you cling onto it as your hope. And it's the same kind of thing that's going on with tikvah. Tikvah is a lifeline. It is a hope. And the tikvah that is hanging from Rahab's window was the hope for her and for her family. It was their lifeline that they urgently needed to escape from death. But I think we also need to realize it's our lifeline too. Though she didn't know it, the hope that Rahab is hanging on to is the promise that God made to Abraham many, many generations ago, that one day all the peoples of the earth, Israelites and non-Israelites, would be blessed through one of his offspring. But one of the frustrating things about hope, we've had a taste of this lately, is the waiting. And Rahab had to wait, tensely looking out of her window, will they come? She put everything at stake. Abraham's descendants, with that promise we've been talking about, they had to wait and wait and wait. And at this point in the story of Rahab, that last hanging line that's yet to be fulfilled is like a crimson cord just kind of emptily flapping in the wind, yet to be fulfilled. And it stays that way for hundreds of years. Hundreds of years. Every leader that rises up, people are asking, are you the one the promise is about? Are you the offspring? And sometimes the answer is almost yes, like David, but then it's no. And it's always no. And then 700 years after the story of Rahab, Isaiah wrote the following. A child will be born to us. A son will be given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders. His name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace. There will be no end to the increase of his government or of peace. And I think what that describes, that passage in Isaiah, is what it would look like when the promise to Abraham is finally completed. Then another 700 years pass with people asking, when? When? It's 1400 years after Rahab, 60 AD, Book of Matthew, this was written. A lot of people we've met along the series here. So Abraham, father of Isaac. And then Isaac was the father of Jacob. And then Jacob was the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah, the father of Perez, who we met, and Zerah, whose mother was Tamar, who we met. And Tamar, skipping some genealogy for you, was the great-great-great-grandma of Salmon, the father of Boaz, whose mother was Rahab. And Boaz is the father of Obed, whose mother was Ruth. Obed, the father of Jesse. Jesse, the father of King David. Skip a bit more genealogy, 25 generations later. Joseph, the husband of Mary. Mary, the mother of Jesus, called the Messiah. Messiah is a way of saying, this is the one we've been waiting for. It is a way of saying, you are the one we've hoped for. It is for you that we hung our crimson rope in the window. Because he's the one who leads us from death into life, who leads us from slavery and into freedom. He's the one who takes our misery and gives us joy. He is hope. His name is hope. That is how we get to an Advent series, because Advent is about waiting, and it's about hope. Just take a moment to think of Rahab and the anxiety as she waited for the people of God to come and honor the promise they made to her because she put everything up to and including her life on the line. And then think of Abraham's descendants waiting. Will God finish his promise? We've had a little taste of it with the miracle building. I think it was the most tense slide of my life that Adam just presented to us. And I knew the outcome, and it still was like the X factor. Think of your own life. You've got these promises that you're waiting for. Because at Advent, what we remember is that God kept his promise. He kept the promise he made to Abraham because he is the God who keeps his promises. That is what Christmas is about, that God keeps his promises. And Jesus' birth is the promise that he kept. We're just coming in to finish here. Because Rahab was the first and she was not the last. And just as she was delivered from death to life, so can we be. And the people of Israel were freed from slavery, so can we be. Tamar from her misery, so can we be. Rahab from her death, so can we be. And the death in our life, using it in a broad sense, isn't just, but it includes this physical death, but also our brokenness, our trauma, our past, our baggage, our wrongness, our addiction, our sin, our shame. Feel like a prison, can feel like a kind of slavery, can't it? Like unbreakable walls that trap us inside. But one of the things we learned last week from Adam is that Jesus is the new Joshua, and he's the one who breaks down the walls in our life. He's the one who breaks through the lies, who undoes the trauma, who changes our present. And like Rahab, he brings us freedom. He leads us into life and we become part of his family. That's the Christmas promise. It's the Christmas gift. It's what we wait for over Advent. And I just want to say this morning, as I finish up, if that's you this morning and you feel like you are waiting for that freedom, you're waiting for hope and for life, then Jesus asks, nothing more from you than to hang, like Rahab, a crimson thread in your heart. And like Rahab, to throw your lot in with him and just to say, I'm with you. It's as simple as that. And so what I've got for us is a load of crimson rope and a pair of scissors. And we'll probably finish up fairly soon. So once the meeting's finished, if you want to come up the front, cut yourself a piece of rope and then take it home with you. I've made mine into a thing. You can plait yours, you can make a bracelet, you could make a tree decoration, hang it from your doorknob, I don't know. But what I want us to do now that we're finishing this series about the promise of God to Abraham is every time you look at your rope is to remember that God keeps his promises. So with that, I'll finish. I'm going to hand back to Adam. I'm going to lay my rope out and then I'm going to go join Robin at the back in case you want some prayer afterwards.